All right, so let's start with the Mishnah. The Yarbe lo susim. Right, so Rashi says, let's take a look at Rashi. What's Espana? Right, so it's to pay the salaries of you know, the people in the military. Okay. Okay, so I'm going to get to that. I mean, it sounds like the language of the Mishnah that the mitzvah of Sefer Torah Shel Melech is a qualitatively different kind of a mitzvah than Sefer Torah Shel Hedyot. The Rambam is going to develop the idea, you know, extensively. Okay, so Tanu Rabbana, the Braisa, lo yar below susim. Well, I mean, so what, he can't have, you know, an armored division? I mean, you know, horses are the ancient, you know, version of a tank. What, he can't have tanks in his army? It's strange. Wow, so this is the rice associated with each and every one. So time of the Kasa Brahmana lo, that, you know, for personal use. Halav hach, yavamina filu kidei rechbo, ufarashav. Okay, so the Gemara says, I wouldn't necessarily have thought that, right, that, you know, it was actually in Isser da Raisa, you know, Rashi says, bitmiya, malchus below rechav ufarashav mi chashiva. Right, that there has to be a certain minimum amount, which is to establish, you know, the status of the melech. But leafushe, go ahead. This is Rashi, right? Leafushe rechav ufarashim v'susim lirkov beharvacha v'lo betzimtzum. It's like you have in this week's etzer, right? Bermekeves hamishnah shalo. So the Rabban says you had Air Force One, you had Air Force Two. Those things are normal. But, you know, for people to have excess is what the Torah is restricting. Lishna acharina, la afuche garcina, not la fuche, but la afuche. Right, so this is like this ancient maneuver. People used to sort of hop from one sus to the other. So apparently, you know, that would be the other way of looking at this. But it comes to a similar place. So whatever is needed, either in a very pragmatic sense or even to the extent that it's needed to establish a certain dignity affiliated with Malchus, is obviously not what the Torah is restricting. What the Torah is restricting is using the office to arrogate power and materials to oneself. So similarly, v'chesev izav lo yarbelo me'od. So yeah. So again, he has to be able to pay the salaries of the people, you know, who serve in his army. That's a matter of national security. Tanu Rabbanan v'chesev izav lo yarbelo. Lo. Lo eno marbe avol marbe hu kidei liten espanya. Time to chasar rachmana lo. Halav hachiyav amina filu kidei liten espanya nami lo. Do we really have a havamina that, you know, that would be just bizarre that the Torah would restrict the king from functioning in a normal fashion? So we say lo tzricha leharvacha. So Rashi says leharvacha. Maybe the iser would just be shalo. Chayalos. Right, so the important thing about that, right, is that, yeah, go ahead, Gavi. So what point is Rashi making? That maybe, yeah, right, so if he needs more money, maybe he should be able to go to the treasury and say, I need to, or Congress, and say, can you appropriate more money for this? That is at least a reasonable Hava. Nobody had a Hava Mina that you can't pay for a military. That doesn't make any sense. But maybe he shouldn't, you know, have it on hand. All right, that's already something, you know, more palatable. So the Gemara says, Hashtadamar lo ledrasha, lo yarbilo nashim my darish bay. What are you going to do with that? We say, yeah. So that is explicitly to say that the king is uniquely restricted in this way. Again, it's not so terribly restrictive, you know, to be, you know, beyond, you know, what, you know, a normal person, you know, should be able to live with 18 wives. But the point is that, you know, this restriction does uniquely apply to the king. This is the only one. Lemute hetiotos mutarin laharbos nashim. Rashi says they're allowed to have as many wives, at least midaraisa, as they want. You know, there's different derabbanans about that. If you look at the beginning of Evan Ha'ezer, you know, maybe four, like Yaakov Avinu. Then, of course, you get to Chayim Derabbeinu Gershom, you know, that we're not really supposed to have more than one wife. It's the Ashkenazim. So skipping down a little bit. V'chosev Sefer Torah l'shmo. Right, so he can't just rely on the one that his father had before him. So Amar Rav Avol Pishini Chulavos of Adam Sefer Torah. Right, so you have to write it for yourself, even though you have one from the previous generation. So Esvei Abayi V'Chosev Lo Sefer Torah L'Shmo. Had Yolo. So it sounds like maybe that's a unique din by a melech. So Gemara says, Lo tzricha l'shtei toros, uchidetanya v'chasev lo es mishna. Wow, so the Gemara feels the need to actually state out loud, right, this, you know, it's a very remarkable idea that no, he doesn't have to take it with him into the bathroom or the shower. It seems like the Gemara is taking this idea very seriously. So we'll get back, you know, much more on the question of Melech versus Hedyot and the nature of the obligation as well. So the same Bryce has quoted, as you see here, put in the Makoros, and Chaf Beis Amud Aleph. So the there's a Rashi there that I wanted to highlight. This is the Rashi that was parenthesized on Chaf Aleph Amud Beis, but it's clearly part of the text on Chaf Beis Amud Aleph. So Shivisi Hashem Lenegdi. Right, so it's a pasuk that we're all, you know, so deeply familiar with. Shivisi Hashem Lenegdi Samid Kimi Mini Balimot. So what's Rashi explaining? That David wrote that not in a generic sentence, in, you know, Shivisi Hashem Lenegdi Samid, but what made that possible? This is on the, probably still is, on the Parochet of Yeshivat Haaretz Yehon. I'm looking up at it. There's a message here, which I think is very inspirational. What caused David HaMelech to have a sense of God awareness? Was it just that he was a supremely spiritual person? Was it a kumzitz that he attended? Avi? Right, it was the Sefer Torah. It was debook the Sefer Torah that caused a deep bonding and binding with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Wow. That's a powerful idea. Now, if you take a look at the Sifrei seems to expand on this idea in a pretty significant way. V'haisei v'karavo kol yimei chayav. The karavo kol yimei chayav. What does that remind you of? The structure here, yamim lelos.
Right.
Rasa knows how to learn, right? Leman tiskor es yom tzeis chamer tzayim kol yimei chayecha. So what's the Medrash Halacha saying? That when should the king be learning? Yeah. Dehainu, all the time. Kol yimei chayev halelos. You wonder when they get to be king. You guys all know the beautiful Agados, the beginning of Masechta Brachos, with David HaMelech learning Torah all night. What's that? Yeah, that's not the, you know. That was just so that he didn't want to die, so he could keep on learning. Okay, so let's take a look at the Gemara and Samach, and Chafam and Beis, and then we'll be in a position. So again, the mitzvos of the Melech seem pretty clear. They're not, this argument will emerge even more clearly, but these aren't like disparate obligations. Like, oh, randomly he can't have too many wives, and randomly he can't have too many horses, and randomly he can't have too much money, and randomly he has to produce a Sefer Torah. But they're obviously meant to create a certain framework, a certain overarching goal in terms of what this man is supposed to represent, and you know how this office is supposed to function. So let's take a look at maybe a counter example, but the Amar Reish Lakish. Tifsach ve'ad Aza, Chavu Shmuel. Lo malach el al mitaso, right? An ever shrinking malchus here. Maklo, that he at least ruled over his staff. Okay. Right, Gundo means, Rashi says, Taliso. Right, he was only the king over his own shirt, which is not a very expansive malchus. The head yot. Right. So there's a question as to whether, you know, he ever regained his malchus. But the image that one has of Shlomo, and we'll talk much more about this, as Shlomo becoming like a kind of an anti-hero, tragically, there appear to be five stages in the Gemara in terms of Shlomo's ever-shrinking Malchus. Initially, he was king over the entire universe, not just humanity, but apparently the upper realms. Shlomo Malach al ha'elyonim al tachtonim, stage one. Stage two, he was sort of kicked out of the elyonim, and he only was king over the Tachtonim, which is nothing to sneeze at, you know, world domination. Stage two, right? Stage three, he's only the melech over Yisrael, but still, you know, a veritable melech. Guess he has to, you know, show up at the convention of Melachim, so he's share this. It's if you've experienced world domination, it's, you know, a little bit of a step back, but still. Then step four is Yerushalayim, right? Just one city. Just the indignity of having to go to the mayor's conference, I suppose. Thinking to himself, you know, this is nothing like, you know, the world domination convention. And then stage five is he's only, you know, the ruler over his staff or his shirt, which is obviously not a melech altogether. Shlomo is anti-hero, sort of somebody who personifies the idea, as we know, of what happens when a person blatantly disregards all of the mitzvos of the Melech, right? Shlomo was, in 2nd Sariel, Shlomo, of course, as we know, Perek Yud Aleph of Sefer Melachim, was Marbe Noshim, was Marbe Kesef Azav, he was Marbe Susim, and we'll talk more about what his thinking was, but, you know, you violate the Torah at your own peril, and he becomes a cautionary tale. And it's only a question of to what extent. Melech hedyot v'melech, melech the hedyot, mandam erhadar, mandam erlohadar. It's a very sad story. Yeah, sorry.
Did you mention the Gemara mentioned in Yisrael, where like Lesof l'malech all Yisrael, reference
to the Chatzot Tachtonim? I mean, the whole world plus the heavens, then just the Tachtonim, Mitziv Sach v'Raza, then just Yisrael, Mishlei Shlomo v'David Melech Yisrael, then, you know, Yerushalayim, and Yikohelas Ha'isi Melech Yisrael Bi Yerushalayim, right? And then Maklo or Gundo. That's the sort of the ultimate way that it comes back. Okay, so, you know, the Gemara is obviously very critical, and like I said, we'll have a lot more to talk about in terms of, you know, what was Shlomo thinking and what does this represent and, you know, why is this, you know, what this teaches us. It's a very, very, very important part of the sugya because, you know, when we talk about, let's say, typically we talk about anyway is like the high point of Malchus is Malchus, David, and Shlomo. And the idea that Shlomo, you know, had such an ignominious ending is obviously very problematic for us. So let's take a look. What was the calculus? So Gabi, let's go back to Chaf Aleph. Starting with Amar Rabbi Yitzchak. So the third line down, once the lines elongate. Bishah Shenasa Shlomo. Okay, so if you want to know, I always was kind of amazed by this line in the Gemara. If you want to understand the roots of not just Korban Bayis Rishon, but Korban Bayis Sheni, right, the Krach Gadol Shebiromi, right, Rome destroyed not the first Beis HaMikdash, but the second Beis HaMikdash, it all goes back to Shlomo's failures. In other words, it's very important. This Gemara is very important. Gemara is saying that Shlomo HaMelech is really responsible for the disintegration of Klal Yisrael. Not just in his generation, but we never recovered from it. And it's really true. The path to Chorban Bayis Rishon was sown by Shlomo, and then, you know, we're saying the Agada is pointing out that Bayis Sheni as well. The moment that Shlomo married Bas Paro, the fate of Israel was sealed. Amar Rav Yitzchak, along these lines, Mipnei Malun is Galu Tamei Torah. So why did the Torah generally not state the reasons, you know, for its mitzvos? Okay, so what's Rabbi Yitzchak saying? This is, again, there's just no way to overstate the importance of this Gemara in terms of our perceptions of what Malchus is. Why didn't the Torah reveal its reasons? There's an assumption here that the Rambam and the Ramban, Gavi and the Sefer HaChinuch all paskin, namely that there is a reason for every single mitzvah. Right? I don't care how esoteric it seems. Rashi says, "Kigo laman esra levisha shatnez v'achilas chazir." So what's the Gemara saying? True. All that is true. I'm just wondering, what is Rabbi Yitzchak's point about Shlomo? Shlomo thought when he read the Torah was saying he shouldn't have too many of these things, right? Velo yasur levavo, so that his heart is not led astray. So, what did Shlomo say about himself? What did he conclude?
That he's going to have all these things, but his heart will stay intact.
Correct. Excellent, Gabi. So, what's that? What's that really driving at? What's the message of this Gemara? That what was Shlomo's basic sin?
Was going, thinking that he himself was able to, that he thought that he had to live, he knew what the living was.
Good. So what, in simple language, what would you call that? What kind of sin is that? Ari? Yeah, Gaifa. About Gaifa. It's about Gaifa. He thought he knew better. And the Torah says that you're going to do these things, and it's going to change you. You think you're infallible, you think you're incorruptible, you think you're such a big tzaddik. So, he said, Ani arba v'lo asur. Ani arba v'lo ashiv. I'm not going to betray the Jewish people. I'm not going to go back to Egypt. I'm not going to. So it turns out that HaKadosh Baruch Hu knew better than him. And it's obviously a cautionary tale because Shlomo HaMelech was Chacham Mikol HaAdam. He was not an unintelligent person. He was actually a very singularly brilliant person. But Gaiva, Taiva, are enough to undermine even the greatest of people or the wisest of people. So that's exactly right, Gavi. It's a sin of arrogance. And it's really fascinating when you put this back into the context of our discussion. We had this big discussion about, is it a mitzvah to have a melech? Maybe we shouldn't really have a melech. Is it a rishus? Is it, if it's a rishus, maybe it's really like Yifas Torah. Maybe it depends on the society. But Avi, as Rosenberg, what dimension does this whole story, right, especially Shlomo as a cautionary tale, how does that impact our perception of it?
Power is going to corrupt.
Right. It's a very, very, very complex institution. Because when you put somebody in a position where they have such enormous authority, and you elevate a person in such a foundational way, it becomes extremely difficult. And al tadin es chavercha shadagilim komo. If you haven't been a melech, you don't know the challenge. Extremely difficult to prevent it from becoming something that it was never meant to be. And Shlomo is this cautionary tale. So Avi, what would you say, al pi halacha, what was the halachic check? You know, Kadosh Baruch Hu knew this, obviously, that it was going to be very difficult for a melech to withstand the intense experience of power and not, you know, go astray in many different respects. So what was the internal halachic check on the system? Right, the problem is that if he really gets arrogant enough, like we talked about with Shlomo, he's just going to disregard that. So what's the built-in halachic check? Emmanuel? Correct. That's the only remedy. Is it an extreme remedy? Of course it's an extreme remedy. The Gemara says that you need a matir, like you actually needed a specific zeres akasav to say you're allowed to go to the bathroom without the sefer Torah. The man, literally, is supposed to carry the sefer Torah around wherever it is. Right? He's tola bizroa, like kmiya, as if it's an amulet. It's not. It's a sefer Torah. But he's literally walking around with a sefer Torah. Yomam v'layla. Shimon, what did you say? Right? Kol yimei chayecha. Hayamim v'halelos. It's an extreme measure. But Eitan, extreme measures are relevant. Extreme measures are appropriate in a situation where the inherent danger and risk is extreme. The whole institution of monarchy may require extreme solutions because the situation is an unstable one. And that may be, again, a huge part of this entire literature that we saw, the Tanayim, the Amoraim, and the Rishonim, say that this is just extraordinarily dangerous. It's really interesting. These Gemaras obviously work to great effect for those who are skeptical of the institution of Malchus as a mitzvah. Ari, your question is exactly on point. Really well done. If you believe that there's this great mitzvah of having a melech, then what you're saying is that the Torah is creating a scenario whereby, you know, people are going to be, or at least this individual is going to be, highly, highly, highly at risk. You're absolutely right to ask that question. So again, I just wanted to emphasize, and we'll go to Emmanuel in a second, how there are really, these Gemaras, I think, work in tandem with the Nitziv Seara. It's not only a question of it being appropriate for that society, but the question is, under any circumstances can this work? You take Chacham Mikol Olam. How does the Gemara refer to him here? This Gemara is not, you know, lampooning Shlomo as some kind of religious degenerate. On the contrary, right, the Gemara says, Nichshal Behen Gedol HaOlam. Refers to him as the greatest in the world. Shlomo was not a lightweight. He was not a lightweight. He's called Yedid Hashem, is Yedidya. And yet, he was susceptible. So what that means is that, in tandem with it, say that, you know, the criterion have to be right from the bottom up. Is the society looking for this kind of leadership? But this Gemara puts an ultimate check on that and says, well, it goes deeper than that. And it goes deeper than that in the sense that what's really required, under all and any circumstance, are extreme measures to keep this scenario from degenerating into something really dangerous. Almost, you know, absurd. The man carries a sefer Torah around all the time. That's the only way we can have any, that's what Emmanuel said, and he's correct. The only way we can have any confidence that he won't utterly, completely disregard the Torah's directives, which will then corrupt him and be a source of destruction for Klal Yisrael, the Krach Gadol Shebiromi, right, is if he literally carries the Sefer Torah around at all times. People will think that he's, you know, again, not to make light of it, that this is some compulsion, right? This is what people would scoff at as a compulsive behavior. Neurotic. What is this man, neurotic? He's going to put the safe. What's going to happen? You're going to put the safer Torah down for a second and you're going to turn into a gopher? People will make fun of him. But the Torah says it's at that level of danger. He has no heter to put the safer Torah down unless he's in a makom, shena rai likros. It's an extreme institution. Emmanuel.
Just as a potential answer to Ari's question, the Sefer HaFinah does acknowledge the fact that there will be Dalvis and there will be Shlomo, but he said that's the price you have to pay if you want to solve the ultimate evil of the polarization. You could say maybe for the Rambam it's a similar idea. He thinks that the king is so good and the fact that he unites the people is so valuable that it would outweigh the fact that he might sometimes have this issue.
Right. I mean, you have to say something like that. Your point is very well taken. But
I'm saying, like, the Sefer HaFinah does acknowledge the fact that there will be. It's not like he said that everything is going to be.
Right. So, again, your point is well taken. And it once again is a referendum on how dangerous the Sefer HaChinuch, on the basis of Rambam, had to believe that any other system was. He's aware that there are problems there. So Melech, and if you're following, you know, the Gemaras here, Melech is a unique area of halacha. Because there's such a deep level of awareness of the problems. And now we've really delineated them at three distinctive levels. So let's make sure we understand. You have the point that we raised, l'chatchila, as we were entering the sugya. How does Melech Basar Vadam coexist with Malchus Shemaim? Isn't that Avodah Zarah, Rabbi Nehorai, the Sifrei, etc.? That's one issue. That issue is always an issue. You have the Netziv's Heara, which is this really a good thing for society? We know that there are societies where it doesn't seem like this is a healthy scenario. Point number two. And then you have the Gemaras arrogated together, you know, chaf through chaf beis. You put the different, that's why I showed them, you know, you have to sort of pick out the lines, which make it clear that giving any human being this level of power is spiritually and morally corrosive. If it could take down the Gadol Ha'olam, it can take down anybody. And the Torah was so cognizant of this that it prescribed an almost obsessive, compulsive solution. It says that you have to do something which, under normal circumstances, would be absolutely bizarre. To carry a Sefer Torah around with you? To meals? To meetings? To any human activity except ones where it would be usur? But that's the only way, I agree with you, Emmanuel, that the Torah felt that you could prevent calamity. And then you have to ask yourself, if that's the solution, is it worth it? And that's what a lot of the Tanaim, the Amoraim, and the Rishonim were saying. If you're the Rambam of the Chinuch, I agree with you again, Emmanuel, you have to believe that the alternatives are so bad that this is the price that you just have to pay. Because otherwise you end up with anarchy. Micah.
The Lashon that it said runs on Aham and everything, makes it seem like it's from the perspective of whether or not the Aham needs it, but I don't see how he works with our Gemara.
I'm saying that the three distinct issues, the Tziv's issue is a separate issue than our Gemara. But everybody's going to have to acknowledge that, let's say you determine that this is what the people need. The people say, we need a melech. We're the kind of people, we like a strong hand. There's still going to be a power. There's still going to be a problem. That's not like the end of the problems. That's just clearing the discussion. That's just clearing the bar and the beginning of the discussion. You still have what I call two other problems. You have the idea of the Avodah Zarah issue, which is, how is having a human melech acceptable? Al pi halacha, we really have, you know, the notion of a Kadosh Baruch Hu as our melech. That's one issue. And the second issue is, how in the world are you going to give somebody this level of power and not have it completely corrupt them? And the Torah's solution to that problem is a truly extreme one. Yeah, Avi, go ahead.
Could this be like why in Tehillim Ayin Beis, like David HaMelech is like so focused on like Aniyim, like he's trying to also like kind of lower Shlomo Melech's perception of like his power. All this is really for just the poor people. You're not doing this for yourself.
I think that's a very, very important Heyara, and something that David was singularly good at for the absolute most part. You know, his record wasn't 100%, but you know, this side of David, this side of Batsheva or Yachit, he really did do an amazing job staying on the, you know, on the straight and narrow and recognizing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the Melech. And I want to come back to that. But when you have an institution, and it seems to take a completely exceptional person for that institution to be successful, it does raise questions about the viability of the institution. It's like all these people who walk around, you know, convinced that communism is right. It's just that every single time in every single place that it's been done, it just hasn't been done right. Yeah. Next time we're going to do it better. You'll see. Lenin had it wrong, and Stalin had it wrong, and Mao had it wrong, and Castro had it wrong, and Hugo Chavez, you know, but if you just do it right, it's really the best system. At some point, you have to start scratching your head and saying, maybe this is a bad system. Maybe this is a system that selects for, you know, tyrannical, murderous people. So if one guy got it right, and everybody else, including his own son and chosen successor, who had the advantage of the template that David HaMelech created, you do have to really wonder. So again, that gets you back into Ari and Emmanuel's space, which is, are there better alternatives? Because, you know, if you read Sefer Melachim is a very, very significant critique of Malchus. But don't forget, it's preceded by Sefer Shoftim, which is a very significant critique of the absence of Malchus. These questions aren't easily resolved. They haven't been. And until the days of Mashiach, I don't think they will be, about how human beings can organize themselves, how Jews should organize themselves. It's a basic question, but it's also a very elusive one for the reasons that we're discussing. If the Gedol HaOlam could be felled by these issues, anybody can. And it's a total conundrum. Save, I think you're right. I think that David HaMelech was uniquely gifted. And I have to tell you, thinking about this over many, 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 many years, it's almost, for me, inseparable with the idea that David didn't begin his life as a prince. The idea of him coming may, you know, as he writes in Sefer Tehillim, me'acharei hanaveh, right, from a very humble place. And not being born into it. And the Sforno's point about the ills of dynasty. Right? Is it an accident that the one who got it most right? And I'm not saying there weren't others. I mean, Chizkiyo is very important. Yoshio is very important. But how do we separate the fact that David HaMelech... Just one second. How do you separate the fact that David HaMelech, right, is uniquely chosen... Avi, on the basis of his character, not on the basis of his gene pool, from our overall evaluation of the institution of monarchy, that's exactly the point that the Sforno is making. And that's exactly the problem with dynasty in general.
Marv, in the Beit Midrash, like, Marv, in the Beit Midrash, phones in the main office, those who had their phones confiscated, please pick them up in the main office.
So, I'd ask you to consider that deeply. I thought about this for a very long time. David HaMelech is the one who's literally chosen for his quality, and everybody else is not. And he's the one who was able to really see what the office was for. it's very difficult. Right, I can give up now, but I want to pick it up with the Yerushalayim Shul Prologue tomorrow.